Hey, and welcome back to another week of the Teal Time Podcast. I'm Jonathan Heater alongside David Teal. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Here we go. Whatever will we talk about?
Yeah. So there was something that happened over the weekend down in Norfolk that was pretty unpredictable.
It was.
By Vegas, by us, by I'm guessing pretty much everyone who had any knowledge of what college football is. It's one of those things, I think you may have written about it. It transcends, like, logic.
It does. It defies it. John, I've been covering college football for 36 years, and I've never been more surprised at an outcome. Never. Of a game I was witnessing, four touchdown underdogs, 28.5 points. Old Dominion was 0-3, and a bad 0-3. Not like they'd played Murderer's Row.
They lost by 42 to Liberty
in the opener. And how bad did Liberty get beat last week by North Texas?
They got worked.
Yes.
They lost to Charlotte,
which was 1-11 last season.
And they blew a 17-point lead against Florida International.
At home.
Not a great start.
0-3.
Privately, and I feel free to say this, and you don't have to. You can agree or disagree. Privately, I have told people that outside of VMI and probably Rice, there wasn't sure wins on their schedule.
No, I agree. And then here Virginia Tech comes in. Inflated national ranking aside, I think we all suspected that, number one, the coaches were way out of whack having them number 10, and the writers probably were at number 13. But they were still 2-0, coming off an unscheduled bye week, had looked good defensively, had looked very crisp offensively. And then it all crumbled before our very eyes.
So there's so much to unpack with this game, and we will do it over the next probably half hour, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and we've got other things to talk about, too, around the league, and especially with UVA and Clemson.
Big game this week for UVA.
So
we'll get to that in a minute, but pardon us for some history talk because this is pretty unprecedented stuff. Okay, so even in a scenario where Virginia Tech loses to Florida State, and Florida State's obviously not very good, as evidenced by them getting drilled by Syracuse, I think in their third game.
Yes, Florida State might be terrible.
Yeah, so that Virginia Tech win, although it was on the road, certainly has lost some luster after the Samford and Syracuse games by Florida State.
Yeah,
but throw all that away, ODU was bad, not good, bad.
Bad.
And I believe this is right. They allowed more yards to ODU than Bud Foster's ever allowed.
Correct.
To an opposing team?
630-some.
To a backup quarterback?
Blake LaRosa, a former walk-on.
Which is why this is completely out of nowhere.
Yeah. 5'10", probably 160, soaking wet. Blake LaRosa comes in the second series. And I thought Bobby Wilder lost his mind. Okay, it's one thing to bring your backup in, but to bring him in when you're pinned on your own one-yard line, that's a tough spot. And not only that, so you're thinking, okay, they'll try to run it a couple times, give him a little space there. No. First play, throws a 30-yard fade route to Travis Fulgham, and they complete it. And there the tone was set.
Fulgham and Duhart were incredible.
They were great, and Virginia Tech's young corners were bad.
I complete transparency here. I did not watch the whole game because I didn't think it was going to be competitive. It was only, even at I think 14-14 at halftime.
14-14 at halftime, Old Dominion scored with about 7 seconds to go before intermission.
I saw the score, and I was like, wow, that's, Virginia Tech's going to probably wake up in the second half. So I didn't turn it on until later in the game. But the touchdown, I think it was the last, next to last touchdown, the go-ahead touchdown. The play that Duhart made was good. But the corners, I mean, the two DBs that were around him, it looked like there was no effort. I mean, I don't know how somebody didn't get a hand up. It wasn't like it was this perfectly thrown ball. It floated up there.
Mm-hmm. Now, the corners especially, Caleb Farley, the redshirt freshman, and Bryce Watts, they really struggled, as did the safeties. Khalil Ladler had a rough game. They brought Waller in off the bench to play some corner. He struggled. It was not Reggie Floyd's finest hour either in the secondary. Ladler missed a tackle, much like he did at Florida State on Cam Akers' long run when Jeremy Cox went 40 for the final touchdown.
The punctuation.
Yeah. When Old Dominion could have taken a knee.
Probably should have.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I saw maybe
Stanford. That was a Mario Cristobal move.
Say a Stanford, Oregon, where they didn't take a knee and fumbled.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking the whole time they should take a knee.
Yeah, it was odd, but yeah, obviously it worked out.
And I mean, but on that drive where Virginia Tech had to force, they had two timeouts?
Yeah.
Maybe three going into that last drive. Force a three and out, or even after a first down, they could have gotten the ball back with plenty of time. Cox was getting like 8 yards on a first down. Yeah. I mean, they were doing nothing to stop him.
By then, the defense was gassed. We talked about the most yards ever given up by Bud Foster, and I'm sure everyone knows by now that Blake LaRusso threw for 495 yards. These are the fourth quarter numbers. Old Dominion snapped the ball 24 times in the fourth quarter, which is a lot. That translates to 96 snaps for a game. 24 snaps, 291 yards on those 24 snaps. LaRusso, 8 for 13 for a buck 54.
That's like 10 point something yards per play.
Yeah, and that's like 20 yards per completion. And then running the ball, they had done nothing the first three quarters. Last quarter, 11 rushes, 137 yards.
Which is complete. I mean, is the only way you can account for that is the defense was beat.
The defense was beat, and it was hot and steamy, and that was part of it. And I think part of it was they panicked. Virginia Tech had not trailed all season. This is a young team. They were in uncharted territory. And, oh, by the way, that panic showed in a really ugly way with the personal foul penalties.
Yeah. Four of them?
At least. I know Chris Cunningham on offense got flagged for bumping an official. I didn't see it on tape. And I went back and watched the DVR. I couldn't find it. And so I don't know how egregious it was. But obviously, you can't make contact with an official.
So a few more history things that I think I saw.
Okay.
The ESPN Power Index had Virginia Tech at like a 98% chance to win.
Yeah.
I think since they've done that index, this was the largest upset, period.
Yeah. But by the way, it's not the biggest upset in Virginia Tech history.
James Madison still?
No. The gold standard is 1998 Temple. In Blacksburg. It was later in the season. The die had already been cast on both teams. Tech was good. Temple was wretched. Virginia Tech was at home. It was like a 38-point favorite. Temple had lost 26 consecutive Big East road games. And Temple won that game.
I remember Temple breaking their streak.
Yeah.
Were you at that game?
No.
Because why would you?
Well, exactly. Why would I have – there was no reason. And I wasn't at the James Madison game. I'll always – that's why I said the Old Dominion game was the most surprising football game I've ever
covered. You've ever been at.
Yeah. I'll never forget the James Madison game. I was out in Los Angeles.
With UVA-USC?
UVA playing Southern Cal, Mike London's first season, his second game. And clearly a better, more intriguing game than – JMU at Virginia Tech. And I'm out there on the West Coast and 3 hours behind, and I'm out enjoying some sun before the night kick in L.A., and my phone just starts going wackadoodle with all my JMU cronies and all of my friends who cover Virginia Tech. And
it's kind of the same feeling I had on Saturday.
Your phone
started popping off.
So did mine in the press box.
I started texting you.
Well, everybody was texting me, and I'm fighting a crazy deadline. I couldn't respond till afterward.
But the JMU thing, well, this is something I think that's been said a lot on this podcast. After that loss to JMU, Virginia Tech recovered and went to the ACC championship game, right?
And won the Virginia Tech won 11 consecutive games after losing to James Madison.
That is something I'd probably bring up this week. But that Virginia Tech team is a lot different than this Virginia Tech team. I think it should be said, and I don't think I'm overstating this, I don't think there is a Power 5 team, period, that would have been an underdog in Vegas at ODU this past weekend.
Not
after what Old Dominion started the season.
Yeah.
Not how they started the season. No way.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. But
all right. What? Sorry. We were gonna. I want to take us into, the other stuff.
Okay.
The dismissal.
Yeah.
Josh Jackson. So you've covered. You've been around as much Virginia Tech football since the Frank Beamer started, probably is just about anybody in the state.
Oh, media-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, no question.
Is this the darkest 3 days that you can remember that program having?
No, there have been some – Frank Beamer having, five losing seasons in his first 6 years.
But there was no expectations then.
No, but, there were NCAA sanctions that he had to overcome from the Dooley administration. There were – Dutch Bachman resigning as athletic director shortly after hiring Frank Beamer. Now, there were darker moments, but just in terms of the team itself and the whole the tumultuous offseason with the unexpected personnel attrition, and now you go and lose at Old Dominion, and you lose your starting quarterback for at least a half a dozen weeks, and I'm guessing for the season, Josh Jackson and his broken left fibula, and then the loss of Trayvon Hill, the team's best pass rusher, he's just dismissed.
Yeah, so the Trayvon Hill news, everybody watching the game knew that Josh Jackson was injured. Obviously, he left the game. Ryan Willis came in. But it looked bad, but the extent, he got carted off, and came back on crutches. So the extent was not completely known. You've seen people with bad sprained ankles come back in a walking boot and on crutches. The Hill news came on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
So, and Jackson didn't come till Monday.
Correct.
So Sunday, you've had, arguably since Virginia Tech became Virginia Tech, since they went to the national championship game, arguably the biggest loss the program's had since then, up there with James Madison, and then your best pass rusher's dismissed.
Yeah, not a good look.
And then your starting quarterback's ruled out for so long.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, the next two teams on your schedule are a combined 8-0. Both are nationally ranked, Duke and Notre Dame.
Well, we've talked about this all season with the attrition at corner and in the defensive backfield, both guys leaving to go to the pros, mm-hmm. and the dismissals. There was going to need to be an emphasis on getting a good pass rush to protect those corners. Now that takes a huge hit.
Mm-hmm. It does. Manuel Belmar is the most likely replacement for Trayvon Hill on the edge, and they like him, and I think he's promising, but he's not Trayvon Hill. Jonathan, I talked to an NFL scout on Saturday before the game, and he pointed at the Virginia Tech roster, and right at 94, Trayvon, that's who I'm here to see. He's that kind of talent.
Well, then, if there were already question marks...
There were.
Then a defense that gave up 600 yards of offense and now is down a pass rusher, and regardless of whether Belmore is good, it thins your depth without question.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the biggest question mark. Well, I mean, that's a huge question mark. Then you have a quarterback who, while just following coverage this spring, had a solid spring in Ryan Willis.
Ryan Willis can sling it. There's no question.
But still, I mean, it derails the plan and the trajectory you had going this season.
Yeah. Josh Jackson had started 16 consecutive games. He knows the system. He's been in it 3 years. Ryan Willis doesn't – he started games at Kansas. I realize that. But he does not have Josh Jackson's experience with Justin Fuente's system. And it's gonna take some time.
Well, the bonus of that would be that you have an offensive mind who can put you probably in a good spot to succeed. You know, not throwing everything at you at once. Even though he was a grad transfer.
Yeah.
So he's an older kid. He's not a freshman. It's not like Quincy Patterson's thrown into the mix. But it will be interesting to see how far down the depth chart they go if Willis struggles. Do you take the red shirt off Patterson? I mean, I know you have the four games. Do you give him
I think Hendon Hooker is next in line.
Right.
And, you know, he had that 69-yard touchdown run. I know, it's William and Mary. But if they need some wheels at quarterback, and Willis showed a little bit of escapability on Saturday. I think he had a 20-yard run there in the fourth quarter. But if they want to install a package, so to speak, then I think you'll see Hooker.
So Quincy Patterson was a person that a lot of recruitniks were excited about, right? Mm-hmm. He was pretty well thought of. He came in, he wasn't here early, so he started at the beginning of fall camp.
Correct.
They have four games to play with. You don't foresee them, at least where we're standing now, fully trying to integrate him into the offense.
I do not.
Because of Hooker's versatility.
Not only that, because of who they're playing and where they are in the season. You've got to get Ryan Willis as much work as possible.
We talked last week about Duke being this was a good game we were pointing to. And then Saturday happened, and it certainly takes some shine off this game, but it doesn't take any importance off the game for Tech.
Oh, gracious, no, because it's a league game. They're still sitting there at 1-0, having beaten Florida State. And Duke's 4-0 for the second consecutive season, the first time that's happened since the early 50s. Quentin Harris is the backup quarterback. Saturday could well be a battle of QB2s. Although David Cutcliffe has been a little coy about Daniel Jones and his potential availability. He has the collarbone from the Northwestern game when he got hurt. But last week when I asked Cutcliffe on the ACC call, he said doctors were amazed at how quickly Jones is recovering. Now, does that translate to some game action on Saturday? I don't know. I would say there's probably a puncher's chance that he sees some action. I think Harris will start. Where I think Duke is really improved these last two seasons is defensively. And for years, decades even, that program was a mess defensively. Last season was their best statistical defense since the late 70s, and thus far, they're even better this season. Duke defended Army better than Oklahoma did.
Yes. That's the game oddly enough, one of our previous podcasts, I got a new phone, so it started auto-playing, and it was in that spot where we were talking about the Army-Duke game, and I picked Army to win outright.
Mm-hmm.
And Duke smashed them.
They did.
I don't think I think more and more that was an indicator of the potential of Duke rather than a strike against Army.
Yeah. Duke has had its share of injuries this season, but this is the deepest, most athletic team that Cutcliffe has had, and that includes the team that went to the ACC championship game, which I believe was 2013. Is that right?
I mean, they scored more points against Army than Oklahoma did.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, Oklahoma had to go OT at home,
right,
against Army, and Duke didn't. I mean, that was wire to wire against the Cadets in the opener.
Now, it helped that Duke opened with them, so they had more time to prepare for the option.
Yes.
We know that in a one-game week or a game week, it's very hard to prepare for that if you can't put anything in weeks ahead of time. And Oklahoma has had some – they haven't had that prep time. But still, I mean, with Kyler Murray playing so well, you would have expected Oklahoma to just run Army off the field.
I did.
Well, I did too. Army had lost some luster in my eyes after the Duke game. So – you know, the commander-in-chief race is still very intriguing. I think Navy lost this weekend.
Lost in overtime at SMU.
Yeah, and SMU, new coach this year, right? Chad Morris is, yes, over at Arkansas.
Yep.
Ooh, that's not a great start for him at Arkansas.
No,
blown out by North Texas.
I was going to say, speaking of North Texas, yeah.
North Texas got a pretty good team.
They're undefeated.
Yeah, and they should be in the mix for Conference USA.
I think they're probably the class of the league.
All right, So Virginia Tech has Duke this week, and then they have Notre Dame. Notre Dame made a quarterback switch during the game, I believe.
No, he started.
He started, right, and that offense was explosive.
And it cost Wake Forest's defensive coordinator his job.
Right. The offense was explosive. They scored a lot of points. He started in the bowl game last year, I believe.
He did.
And they won that game as well.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, Wimbush has been a steady player, but they haven't shown up in big games.
And he's not accurate throwing it.
No.
And Book threw for 350-something, I believe, Saturday at Wake Forest. And now, you know, the Irish get Stanford this week. I mean, it's a great week for games now.
Yeah. The Stanford-Notre Dame game will be great. Is that in Palo Alto or is that in South Bend?
I don't know. I should know. But you also have Texas-Oklahoma. You have Penn State-Ohio State.
Yeah. The Penn State-Ohio State game is, an 8 o'clock start.
Yeah, that's where game day is. That's a state college. It's the whiteout game.
And the Red River Shootout's usually – I don't think it's called that anymore, right?
I think it is.
I know they started getting rid of the biggest cocktail party in the Red River Shootout.
Okay.
That's always been an afternoon game, right? So
yes,
the state fair.
It's often a nooner.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a very interesting week of college football. So I don't know if there's anything else that you want to add or that I missed going through the ODU game.
Well, not necessarily about the ODU game. I just think Justin Fuente's been at Tech now for 2+ seasons. He's won 23 games. He's lost 9. This is clearly, I don't know if crisis is overstating it, but it's without question the biggest accumulation of problems that he has faced. And watching him, his staff, and his players navigate it is going to be fascinating. It really is. Just one thing I noticed watching the game on DVR yesterday, Josh Jackson had to be in a ton of hurt the other night, both physically and emotionally. Man, he came out of that locker room. He's not sitting there on the bench. He's leaning on crutches on the sideline. Even after Hazleton dropped the fourth down pass with, inside 2.5 minutes to go, and you're thinking, okay, it's over now. He's like clapping and encouraging. And I thought, you know, maybe it's trivial, but I didn't think so. I was impressed with that. And if that kind of leadership is prevalent throughout the locker room, one, and number two, do the young people on that team, the younger players, the underclassmen, do they absorb it? Then I think the Hokies have a chance. If not, they could be in for an extended rough patch
here. Part of that could dwell or come from, you know, being a coach's son and understanding, mm-hmm. you know, that aspect of the team. But, you know, Virginia Tech's going to win some games, I think, the rest of the year. I don't think that's very far-fetched. But no. There's not a game on the schedule. Now, based on what happened against ODU, where you can 100% say they're going to win.
No, absolutely
even
not.
With a down Georgia Tech.
Down Pitt, North Carolina. Pitt,
North
down
Carolina
Pitt.
Being kind of, who knows, you know, we didn't even really want to predict that game last week because we had no idea, and Carolina won. And Miami and
BC.
Notre Dame. Yeah.
I was all hyped on BC, and boy, did that train come to
you
a
were
screeching
singing
halt
the praises
Saturday.
Of Mr. Brown.
Yeah, it
I
didn't
think
go
he threw
so
four
well.
Picks.
At, didn't go so well at Purdue now, did it?
No. And then staring at the end of the season is a team that has made it their goal to beat you.
Yeah.
So that's an easy transition over to Virginia.
Very clever.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. I'm often in charge of the odd transitions on this podcast. Yeah,
very smooth segue.
Set that one up nice. So the Cavaliers mm-hmm. had an impressive showing for sure. Against Louisville. Now, Louisville's not very good.
Louisville, we were talking maybe Florida State's terrible. And oh, by the way, Florida State and Louisville play this week down in the Derby City. Louisville's offense is wretched.
I think one of the interesting storylines this year in college football is offensive minds not being able to score. Petrino, Chip Kelly, Kevin yeah. Sumlin. I mean, there's been a lot of guys who have made their mark with offensive football, and they have not delivered.
Virginia held an ACC opponent on Saturday without a touchdown for the first time since 2009 against Maryland. And Louisville's 214 yards were the fewest the Cavaliers had allowed since 2013 against Pittsburgh.
Maryland's not in the league anymore.
No.
So that's how long ago that was. Mm-hmm. 10 seasons ago.
Nine.
That's right. 9 seasons ago. Yeah. So they had the loss in Indiana, right?
Yep.
Bad weather, tough circumstances.
Yeah, and Indiana's what? Decent? 3-1?
And they lost by 4. It wasn't like, you know, it was close. It was much better showing than last year in Charlottesville against Indiana.
By far.
Ohio's not very good.
No.
And they put up a lot of points. So we had pointed to the Louisville game as a good barometer for where they're at. And to play defensively like that with a group that we've had question marks about because of how much leadership they lost last season.
Right, and now, moving forward, they've lost two more guys to injury. Richard Burney, the defensive end, who missed the Louisville game, now he's done for the year, Bronco Mendenhall.
Converted tight end, right?
Yep, and that's a medical condition. I don't want to. I have no idea what that's about. And then Jordan Mack, an inside linebacker, is out at least or approximately 6 weeks with a shoulder, and he's really good. I mean, he was going to be the new Micah Kizer in terms of calling the defense and strength up the middle. So, you know, how does that play out moving forward? I mean, the defining moment of the Virginia Louisville game. Is Bryce Perkins gets picked. I believe it tipped off Alamide Zaccheaus' hands. Louisville runs it down to Virginia's 3-yard line. Couldn't punch it in.
Yeah.
And the play calling, they ran 3 times inside the tackles. Yeah. 3 times.
Yeah.
And netted 0 yards.
And that was before pass came back, right?
Yes.
So they had a guy who can get out of the pocket and make plays. Well, theoretically can get out of the pocket and make plays. And to do that, to have that style on 3 straight plays is kind of head-scratcher.
Yeah. So they had to settle for a field goal, and that was the last time they scored.
I mean, I know you brought up the history of how long it's been in the ACC since they've done some things on defense. But I think it's worth repeating that a team last year that had Micah Kizer and Quinn Blanding – and Andrew Brown, right, didn't do this defensively against an ACC opponent.
No. No. And got embarrassed by Navy in the military.
Completely. All right. This is an interesting run for UVA because they have three straight difficult games, right? In Raleigh.
Right. Then a bye.
Against NC State. They're off. Then they have Miami and Duke.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really crucial stretch to determine how good they're going to be.
Yeah. And NC State is, I was looking through schedules last night, and this is all by schedule and weather quirks, because NC State's game against West Virginia was canceled by the hurricane. NC State is the only Power 5 team in the country that has not played a Power 5 team. So I'm not sure how much the Wolfpack is 3-0, but what do victories over a very good, obviously, FCS team in James Madison, and then Georgia State and Marshall on the road? Marshall's good.
Marshall's got a solid team.
Yeah.
Georgia State, not so much, as much as it pains me to say.
So I'm not sure what to make of NC State. I do know this. Ryan Finley and Kelvin Harmon are the best quarterback-receiver combination in the league, the most accomplished, and they're really good. But otherwise, I mean, NC State's averaging like 3.7 yards a rush. It can't run the ball. It's all on Finley. So watching Virginia scheme against that is going to be interesting. And furthering the intrigue, at least to me, is Bronco Mendenhall has now told us that he is delegating play calling of the defense this season. I mean, for years, both at BYU and at Virginia, Mendenhall has been the de facto defensive coordinator. Sometimes assistant coaches have had that title, other times not. But he's called the defense during the game. Now he says he wants to be more of a CEO with this team and coach coaches and influence both the offense and the defense and the special teams. And so now Nick Howell, his defensive coordinator, is calling the signals on game day.
Well, it's worked out pretty well. I mean, they gave up a lot of points against Ohio, but you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot to extrapolate from that.
Yeah, I don't either, just because they were ahead by so much so early.
So before the season, I think, and I know we're only a third of the way through the year, but at the beginning of the season, I didn't think Virginia was going to make a bowl game. I think now I think there's six wins there at least.
Yeah.
I don't know who they are. I mean, with Pitt, well, they're going to beat Liberty, I think, unless there's some dramatic injury stuff.
Yeah, so then you got to get two more.
And there's Georgia Tech and Pitt and UNC and NC State. I mean, Miami's probably going to be tough. Virginia Tech sitting at the end of the season.
I've seen some really good Miami teams come to Charlottesville and struggle and occasionally lose.
A really good Miami team almost lost at home last year to Virginia.
Virginia lit them up. Kurt Banker for about 32, 33 minutes was chucking it as well as he ever has. And then it went sideways and Miami got the turnover chain going and Virginia couldn't stop them. But, yeah.
Dude, you've seen the game, or you DVR'd it, and you've seen the Virginia game since?
Virginia-Louisville?
Yeah.
Yes, watched it yesterday.
Brennan Armstrong came in when Perkins looked like he maybe dislocated a finger or popped a finger out. And he looked competent. I mean, I know he had the long run.
He did.
It's very peculiar seeing someone wearing 98 playing quarterback.
Yes.
But
and their other backup wears 36, so it's...
I thought he looked competent. I think he had a pretty good pass that was dropped or deflected. I thought he was fine. Now, over the span of a game, you know, that's a different story. But I thought he looked okay.
Mendenhall's comment, I believe, was, "I'm actually going to sleep a little better, knowing, or thinking at least, that my backup quarterback is capable," because he wasn't sure.
Yeah, well, he definitely moved the ball. I think they may have gotten a field goal out of that drive.
I believe you're right.
I was watching it live, and I didn't play it back, but I feel like he threw a slant into the end zone that was dropped, or maybe somebody got a hand in and broke it up.
They definitely didn't get a touch. I don't know if that was one of the field goals they missed or not.
But he did have the 30-something yard run. He did. It was an impressive run.
Yeah, he scooted, didn't he?
Yeah, because he was bottled up about 10 yards out and broke a tackle, and he's very thin, looks very, very like a high school kid. He still looks like a high school kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a situation like Perkins, where Perkins has to leave the game, you know, maybe all is not lost. But yeah, they were super impressive last week. Arguably, the most impressive performance in the ACC last week, I think.
Yeah, could have been.
I know Louisville's not good.
You're right.
But still, I mean, there's question marks about Virginia. It's not like Virginia's a ranked team.
Clemson was pretty good in Atlanta.
Yeah, so that's a good transition over to Trevor Lawrence and the situation developing at Clemson. So Kelly Bryant, who led Clemson to the playoff last year, came into the season, and Trevor Lawrence was one of the most highly recruited quarterbacks in the country. He came in and has played some, more so than others, in the first three games. And then on Saturday, it looked like Dabo kind of took the training wheels off. I think he threw for four touchdowns, and he only threw for like 200 yards, but four touchdowns. He's a very efficient passer.
He really is.
He throws it into some tight windows, and now he's been named the starter this week. And so it'll be interesting to see how much they actually, you know, bounce back and forth, or if it's now Trevor Lawrence's job. I thought from game one it was going to be his job at some point this season.
You were right. And the opponent this week? Undefeated Syracuse coming to Death Valley. Syracuse being the team that upset the Tigers last season in the Carrier Dome, Clemson's only ACC setback. Very interesting game. Defensively, we all know how good Clemson can be and should be. Eric Dungy at Syracuse has been playing very well. And I certainly like Clemson, but I'm fascinated to see how competitive Syracuse is.
And Clemson, I guess if NC State stays undefeated, that's a big one. And they play Duke later in the season, but Clemson's going to be favored by maybe double digits the rest of the season. And they don't have many games left on their schedule that you'd circle as, you know.
South Carolina.
South Carolina, because of the rivalry.
Yeah.
But South Carolina's. They're nothing to write home about. No one in the SEC East outside of Georgia really is. Maybe Kentucky this year.
Undefeated Kentucky,
yeah.
Right? And nationally ranked Kentucky.
That's right. I can't remember that happening in recent years. It hasn't happened in recent years. I can't remember the last time it did happen. Didn't they play Virginia in a Peach Bowl one year?
No.
No. Who am I thinking of? I don't know. Georgia played Virginia in a Peach Bowl.
Yes, twice.
But... one thing I wanted to talk about is what Clemson did in College Station against Texas A&M. I think they won by two versus what Alabama just did to Texas A&M.
How about that?
I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, Alabama, in this whole run, under Saban, has never had a quarterback. And now it's almost, like, unfair how good they could be. I mean, if the defense is just on par with defenses in the past and they've got a guy like that, I don't know. Maybe they're unbeaten. I mean, they're beating teams like Virginia Tech beat William & Mary, but those teams are SEC teams.
Yeah, Tua's, he's brought a completely different dimension there. And you mentioned the contrast in how Alabama and Clemson fared against A&M. A&M averaged better than 10 yards a play against Clemson. They weren't averaging 10 yards a play Saturday against Nick Saban's bunch.
I mean, I'm at the point where I think there's no way I'm picking against Alabama unless Tua gets hurt. But I think there's only like three or four teams in the country that can beat Alabama, that on their best day can beat Alabama based on what I've seen this year.
Are LSU and Auburn among that group?
No, they're not.
Okay.
Ohio State.
Georgia.
Georgia and Clemson. And I don't know if Clemson can.
Penn State might be pretty good.
we'll see Saturday. Yeah. I picked Penn State before the season to go to the playoff, but that game, who'd they go to overtime against?
Appalachian State.
Yeah, that one kind of. Now they bounced back and blew out the last two opponents, and this game on Saturday night will be a huge indicator of how good they are. But I just don't think I'm not saying that I think any of those teams will beat Alabama. I think on their best day, those are the three, maybe four teams that have a shot to beat Alabama. Tua Tagovailoa is the best player in college football.
He might. I think he's a Heisman front runner.
I mean, the things he's doing.
Yeah.
He hadn't thrown an incompletion on third down until Saturday. I mean, it's just laughable. They're hanging 60 on Ole Miss. I don't know if they got to 60 on Saturday, but 50-something against A&M. I mean, I don't know if we've seen a Saban team this explosive offensively.
Oh.
Not even close, right?
No, not even approaching it.
LSU doesn't have the offensive firepower to keep up with them. And Auburn, I don't think so. I think Alabama's going to be mighty mad going into that one after last year's Iron Bowl.
I would imagine.
All right. We've diverged a little bit. Anything else on Virginia?
Well, Virginia's like a 7-point dog on Saturday. Give me some of that.
you're double dipping Saturday, right?
I am. Yes. Doubleheader. 12:20 kick in Raleigh, 7 o'clock kick Durham.
Let's, real quick, is there anything we missed from last week in the ACC that we didn't talk about that was – I mean, we talked about BC getting manhandled a little bit. Wake got blown out by Notre Dame.
Yeah. No, not really. I don't believe so.
So tonight, and this podcast we're recording Wednesday, so it'll be up either Wednesday or Thursday tomorrow night. Sorry, North Carolina and Miami play shouldn't be much of a problem for the Hurricanes.
Miami on Thursday night, especially at home, is solid gold.
And he
always has been.
He pulled the switch on Saturday and Ngosi Perry played.
Yes, and
played well.
I would think, and Rick's playing it coy, much like Cutcliffe, but he's gonna start on Thursday night.
I would think so. Miami's winning that game. I'd be shocked if anything else happened. Georgia Tech's hosting Bowling Green. I know the Jackets haven't been very good, but they'll get back right on Saturday afternoon. Clemson, Syracuse is intriguing because Syracuse is undefeated, but I would imagine Clemson's going to manhandle Syracuse, especially after last year.
I think they're going to be pretty fired up. I think Brent Venables is going to have his group focused.
Pretty rare to have a 25-point line for two undefeated teams.
Is that what the number is?
Yeah, this deep into the season.
That strikes me as excessive.
Maybe, but I still don't feel comfortable saying that Syracuse is going to be within that margin.
If I was picking, give me Syracuse in 25. Thank you.
I do think that maybe I'm oversimplifying this, he would never admit this, but perhaps, and I think we talked about this last week, we're seeing a mirror image of Clemson this year versus Alabama last year, that Dabo knows that Kelly Bryant isn't going to give them enough on offense to compete with the Alabamas. And they're making this change to give him as much time because right now they're just playing for the playoff. I mean, well, they've always been playing for the playoff, but they got a lot of games and their talent is so that they have a margin for error to get ready for that playoff.
Agreed. It's a nice luxury to have.
Temple, Boston College.
Temple lost its opener to Villanova. Boston College got to win that game.
Especially at home.
Yes.
NC State, Virginia.
Give me Virginia in 7. And I think they went outright.
I still think NC State wins.
Okay.
But I'm buying more stock on Virginia every week.
Yeah. The Wolfpack strikes me as too one-dimensional on offense.
They are. They are for sure. Pitt's down in Orlando against Central Florida.
That's not going to go well.
No, it's not. It's not going to go well. Central Florida, again, explosive on Friday night last week against Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, we were watching a little bit of that at our house when everybody was over.
Wake and Rice.
I don't know anything about Rice, I confess.
Yeah, I don't either. They're 1-3. I mean, they were terrible last year.
If Wake's going to get bowl eligible, let's put it this way. Got to have.
Yes, yes. Florida State and Louisville, that's that's another one. Florida State's a 6-point favorite at Louisville.
I would pick Florida State. I will pick Florida State.
I don't know. nothing would surprise me.
I would bet the under, whatever it is.
Well, neither of them can play much offense.
Correct.
By the way, Wake is a 26-point favorite against Rice.
Ooh.
And then Duke, Virginia Tech.
I think Duke's going to win.
Duke, you know, the 5-point favorite according to ESPN, so 8 points on a neutral field. Would have never guessed that going into the season. Would have never guessed.
No, if they're 5, they'd be 2-point on a neutral field.
That's right. Sorry. I reversed that. Sorry.
Yes.
I never would have guessed going into the season or even last week that Duke would have been a favorite. Even though it's in Durham, I still thought Virginia Tech would have been a favorite.
This is only the second time in their 15 meetings as ACC rivals that Duke is favored over Virginia Tech. The other time was 2014, also in Durham. Virginia Tech won that game 17-16.
I mean, if I'm picking the game, like I have a feeling that the Hokies are going to win, but there's no logical reason to feel that way.
I think they're going to play better, but yeah. I just think Duke is good.
I do too. Duke's playing well. Duke is good. They've played well. The results every game this season have been impressive. And Virginia Tech has a million question marks on defense, at quarterback, from a psyche standpoint.
Yeah.
So everything tilts towards Duke. I have no reason to believe it, but I just have a feeling that the Hokies are not only going to stay competitive, but maybe be able to pull out a win down there.
That'd be a hell of a win for them. It really would be.
But, you know, for everything, for the trajectory of the season changing in Norfolk, it changes again if they win in Durham.
Yes, absolutely. Because as Justin Fuente said after the game Saturday night, in talking to his team, he told them, "I liked you a lot better when people were telling you you're no good." And maybe that's what they needed to hear again, because I'm sure they've heard it in volumes this week.
Yeah, I'm sure they have too. One thing I thought that was interesting that Ed Miller from the Pilot wrote about the idea of this win being a landmark win and a program builder for ODU, but does it mean anything this season for ODU? Like, it's obviously a win to hang your hat on, but does it change this season?
Right. Right. You talked about trajectory. Does it change the Monarchs' trajectory? And they go to East Carolina this week. I believe the Pirates are favored, right, by like a touchdown, and probably deservedly so. But if they could steal that one.
Well, to get any chance of a bowl, they got to win Saturday.
Yeah, to make up for the at least 2 and maybe 3 unexpected losses to start the season.
If you told me they were beating Virginia Tech before the season, I'd tell you they're 4-0.
4-0, yes. Agreed.
All right, quickly through everything else. Washington's hosting BYU. We don't have to pick that one, but these are some of the other big games.
Yeah, good game.
Stanford is at Notre Dame. Stanford 7, Notre Dame 8, I believe. That's a really good game. I think Notre Dame's going to win.
I do too.
Ohio State's in Happy Valley against Penn State. I think Ohio State wins that game.
My anti-urban bias is showing through. I'm going to pick the Nittany Lions.
Florida is bounced back a little bit from the Kentucky win. They're at Mississippi State. That's an interesting one.
Mississippi State coming off a loss to Kentucky. Is that right? Is that who beat Mississippi State last week?
Yeah. Kentucky plays South Carolina this week. They could go to 5-0, I believe. I mean, who knows when the last time that's happened. Texas and Oklahoma's next week.
Oh, it is. My bad.
Texas has Kansas State this week.
The suddenly resurgent Longhorns.
That's right. Baylor, Oklahoma's got Baylor. A Baylor team that I believe got beat pretty handily by Duke.
Yes.
Is that right?
Well, that was 2 weeks ago.
Yes. Tennessee is at Georgia. That is only interesting in name only.
Yes.
And West Virginia, the other ranked matchup of two ranked teams is West Virginia at Texas Tech. And so it'll be interesting to see if the Heisman, Will Grier, I think, he's a little under the radar, I think, because of how good Tua's played.
Mm-hmm.
But he's putting up huge numbers.
He is.
And if they can get some wins against the Oklahomas of the world and Texas, I mean, that would go a long way, I think, to boosting his candidacy.
No doubt.
All right. It'll be an interesting Saturday for you down in the Triangle.
It will, but before we go.
Oh, Ryder Cup.
No, not even that. One word. Tiger.
Oh, yeah. Woo. So we saw each other Friday night, and I think the first thing you said to me was something about the tour championship. Wasn't about ODU, Virginia Tech.
No.
And then Tiger goes out, and he's... He had a little shaky back nine, but won by, what, three strokes?
Two
strokes. Yeah, he missed that relatively short putt on 18 and tapped in. Yeah, it was – I mean, that crowd behind him –
How about that?
– was unlike anything I've ever seen.
Domestically, for sure. I mean, that's a standard fare at the British Open, but I think the volume of the crowd, the quantity of – it. We were watching on TV Sunday at our house, and Jill and I were like, oh, my gosh.
Standard fare at the British Open in that they come on the course.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen them surround the player like that.
Yeah. No, it was – people want that guy to win.
Rory bailed out of there quick.
Yeah.
He ran ahead. Well, I think it was the most – highest-rated FedEx Cup tournament, period, ever. And it was the highest-rated tour championship since, like, 2007. Golf is better when he is good.
Yes. Oh, there's no doubt.
And in the 5 to 8 years or whatever it's been since he hasn't been largely relevant on the biggest stage, even though there are plenty of great golfers who I think are very interesting, no one has captured, not Rory, not Spieth, have captured the attention that Tiger does.
No, not Brooks Koepka, not Justin Thomas.
Not Dustin Johnson.
No, none of them.
He is a absolute game changer and arguably the biggest name in the world of sports. I mean, him and LeBron are probably the two biggest icons in sport, right?
Yeah, I don't follow soccer enough to know, but
American sports. Serena, maybe. But those are the titans, right?
Yes.
Tiger, you could argue with Jordan and Ali as some of the most famous worldwide athletes ever. There's not many places in this world that Tiger Woods can walk in and he's not instantly recognizable. Somebody said, I think Dan Hicks may have said on the telecast that was the biggest comeback. He thought it was the biggest comeback in sports history.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. Ben Hogan did it at a major and then won several majors after that, after his car accident in the 40s, late 40s, early 50s.
He did, but Ben Hogan wasn't Tiger's age. Ben Hogan didn't do it in the current environment, both competitively and media. I just think the pressures surrounding Tiger and the relentless injuries and the self-inflicted personal issues were, I think they transcend what Hogan went through. I think it's almost an apples and oranges thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's different eras.
Mario Lemieux is one that comes to mind after battling cancer and had a lot of issues. But a lot of hockey players play later than most athletes. But if you're putting Jordan and Ali and Tiger in the same boat, it's interesting that all three of them had kind of a situation in their career that they had to recover from. Jordan leaving the sport, Ali with the draft.
Yep.
It's really interesting that those guys have all kind of had those same things and eventually bounced back and overcame them. I still think he needs to win a major to fully...
He does.
...to fully come back.
And that's his standard. That's not a standard that we are foisting upon him. That's his measure of himself.
Right. We didn't put a Jack poster on our wall and a Tiger post to it next to it and think he was doing that. That was his pressure.
Yes.
But it was as fun, even though there wasn't like he had to make shots down the stretch. He had a big enough lead. It was just fun to see the crowd responding to him.
Yes,
and
the interaction, and then to see the players respond to Tiger, which a decade ago you know better than I because you've covered more golf majors than I. It never would have happened.
Well, the idea of players greeting other players off the course is a relatively new thing. And it's been a critique of the young Americans being friends.
Yeah, and Tiger has allowed them into his circle, which he's never allowed before.
The first time I've ever seen Tiger emotional at the end of a round was Sunday. I've never seen him where I thought he may cry. Like, he has... arguably the most robotic athlete ever. Mm-hmm. And to see genuine emotion and genuine pride that the crowd had embraced him like that, it was something to see. And it I hate that the time zone messes us up, but that Ryder Cup's gonna be a lot of fun.
It is. Yeah, it's gonna mess with our sleeping habits, but and the Americans are gonna crush them, but it's still
I don't know. Man, what's the last time they've won over in Europe? 90 something? I mean, it's been a long time.
This isn't Britain, though. This is Paris.
That's true. That's true. I would put the Americans at a slight favorite, but Jordan Spieth's not playing well.
True.
Phil's not playing well. It's going to be a must-see. And Tiger, as he's kind of embraced this world, he's never been someone that, you know, has wrapped himself in the flag for the Ryder Cup. And it'll be interesting to see how much he embraces
it. He did 2 years ago as vice captain.
He did. It'll be interesting to see how much he embraces all of it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll be watching, and we'll be back next week as we hear about your trip down to the Triangle and how things fare for the Cavaliers and Hokies.
Sounds good, man. Look forward to it.